11 o'clock hour, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace live at Titans training camp. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. The Big Machine, Music City Grand Prix, coming to our city this weekend. Can't wait. Year number two of the Grand Prix, and it's going to be awesome to see that. You can catch tomorrow night from 6 to 7 our Big Machine Music City Grand Prix race special. Presented by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I will be hosting that. But right now, we say hello to Marcus Erickson. He is the defending winner of the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. He is also the defending winner of the Indianapolis 500 and driver of the number 8 Husky Chocolate Honda for Chip Ganassi Racing. Marcus, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Good to have you on with us again. I know it has to feel exciting that not only are you walking in here as the defending winner of this race, but you've also won the biggest race of them all at Indy earlier this year. How you feeling, champ?
Yeah, it sounds pretty good when you put it out like that, I guess. It's been an amazing last year, really. And, you know, winning in Nashville last year was amazing. It was such a fun event, fun race, and being the first ever winner was really, really cool. And then, yeah, like you said, winning the biggest race of them all, the 500 this year, and fighting for a championship. It's been fun, for sure.
Yeah, you look at the history at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and you all were just there for the Grand Prix. Alexander Rossi got the win this weekend, but to win on that oval, to kiss the bricks, the milk, everything that goes with it, just what was that moment like for you? Not you know, career-wise, but just personally to be able to experience that.
Yeah, it was massive. You know, it's one of those things that you dream all your life and work all your life towards a moment like that. And to do all those traditions after winning, and, you know, it's just unbelievable. And then it's moments that you will always, you know, I will always remember those. And it makes sort of all the hard work over your career, your life, all worth it for a moment like that. So it's, yeah, it was amazing. And I still struggle to understand that it actually happened. I think, you know, it's so crazy, but it's just amazing.
We're talking to Marcus Erickson. He will be in the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix this weekend. This interview presented by the Nashville Sheriff and Social Furniture in West Nashville, where we sell comfort, shop local, shop social at 5412 Charlotte Avenue. And Marcus, you mentioned the Grand Prix last year. You went airborne during that race. You were able to repair your car, and you end up winning the thing. I mean, I look at that, and I talked to you afterwards, and you were still kind of in disbelief that it had happened. But it was wild and wacky for you, but ultimately you were the one that got the trophy.
Yeah, it was, I think, the most crazy race of my life and my career. There in the beginning, after going airborne and, you know, trashing my car pretty much, I was pretty certain that I was gonna have to retire on like lap 5 or whatever when that happened, and to end up 2 hours later standing in victory lane and, you know, celebrating with my team was pretty crazy. And yeah, it took a while to sort of figure out how that actually happened, but it was such a crazy race with so many things happening, and we had a lot of speed in the car, which, you know, in the end made a difference when we were got ourselves up to the lead. But yeah, it was a crazy race, and I'm planning to win again, but maybe a bit less dramatic than last year, let's say.
What are you, you know, they're not really doing too much to the track. I know they modified a few things, some tweaks here and there, but now that you've done it, you've had a year under your belt to go around this place, how much of a difference does that make coming in this year that there's going to be some familiarity?
Yeah, it makes a big difference, I think, for all of us coming back a second time. You sort of have a base to start from instead of starting completely from a clean, paper like it was last year. So it makes quite a big difference. But in general, you know, I'm just excited to come back. I think the delay was really, really fun last year. Had a good mix of different type of corners, and, you know, going over the bridge back and forth over there was so spectacular and so unique in the racing world. So I loved it. I thought it was such a fun layout. So I know, like you said, they've done some small tweaks, but nothing major, which I think is good, because I think it was a really fun, fun racetrack.
talking with Marcus Erickson. You mentioned battling for a championship. You sit second right now after the Indy Grand Prix this weekend. Will Power leading the championship right now only by 9 points. So how much more important does it make solid runs in these last few races for you to try and capture your first championship?
Yeah, it's going to be very important. You know, only four races to go, and I've been leading for the last five rounds, and then I just lost the lead this past weekend. But it is, like I say, super close in the points. So I need to bounce back and have a strong weekend now in Nashville, and then ideally take back that championship lead. It's going to be important now to score big points here on the stretch with the last four races. And like I said, Nashville brings obviously a lot of good memories from last year, and I have good confidence going into the weekend. So looking for a big result.
We've so much enjoyed getting to know the riders here for the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. We're talking to Marcus Erickson, the defending champion, who hails from Sweden. And Marcus, when you win a race in Nashville, you know you've got a lot of influence around town. So we're very curious if you help with the negotiations between the Predators and Philip Forsberg, because we're really excited that Philip is re-upped with the Predators for the next 8 years.
Yeah, no, I had quite a lot of talking to do with that. You know, I was telling him, you know, that, you know, you need to stay with the Predators because, you know, I'm the defending winner here. You know, that's going to happen. So I take a lot of pride in that extension for sure.
I think we talked to you a little bit last year about your hockey background. It's such a big sport in Sweden, and you were a goalie growing up. And so how long did you stick with hockey? How long did you maybe dream of staying with it, and when did you decide to make racing your thing?
Yeah, it was my other big passion as a kid was the ice hockey. So I was actually doing hockey in the winters and go-karts in the summers all the way up until I was 16. So I was, I loved my hockey. And then when I was 16, I had to sort of choose what the career to pursue. And I chose racing, which I think was a good decision in the end. But I still really enjoy, you know, hockey. I follow hockey, and I have a lot of friends playing both in Sweden and here in the States in the NHL. And I definitely want to go to a Predators game here at some point as well. It seemed like a fun place to go and watch a game. The atmosphere seems amazing. So that's definitely on my list here in the near future.
Well, we can make that happen, Marcus. You just let us know. In fact, it's the least we can do is get you to the game. You practice with the Ducks. I think we should set up a practice with the Predators so you can face the Philip Forsberg wrist shot.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah, like you said, I was there out there with the Ducks. I have a friend, Hampus Lindholm, who played there for a long time.
Yeah.
He got traded to the Bruins here in couple of months ago, but that was amazing to go out there and play. And I think Segras, what's his name, Trevor Segras, he was also out there and shooting some shots at me, and Rickard Rakell as well. So he was some good players, and you know, I managed to save a couple of shots at least, so that was good.
Well, how this is something that we always kick around, you know, what's the hardest thing to do in sports? You've got a couple of them, right? Driving 200 miles an hour in a car and trying to stop the puck, you know, with all the bodies in front of you and the speed they shoot it at, that's pretty unique experiences. So how do you try to compare those things?
Yeah, it was funny, you know, growing up, because I felt like, you know, the reflexes and the way you had to sort of read the game as a goalie was actually something that, was also something when I became better at that. I felt like that was also making sense in the racing car, especially those with the reflexes and you know, being ahead of the game. It's sort of similar in racing. You need to be obviously very fast in your reflexes, but also being able to think ahead and think what's going to happen in the race. So there is some similarities, even though it might not seem that way, but there is definitely some similarities there.
Well, Marcus, we appreciate the time today. Best of luck this weekend here at the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix. It's going to be fun for year number two, and maybe you can go back to back.
Yeah, that's the plan. I can't wait, you know, to go there and see all the fans and see the city again. I think it was such a fun weekend last year, and really hoping to see a lot of people out and a great race on Sunday.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
Marcus Erickson, he drives the number 8, a Husky Chocolate Honda for Chip Ganassi Racing. And Chip Ganassi Racing actually has a winning streak here in Nashville, going back to the Nashville Super Speedway. When they would run out there, Scott Dixon, his teammate, had won some races out there. And then you include last year, I think it's 5 in a row that Ganassi has won in the Nashville area. So, Marcus, a very, very talented driver joining us here on the show. And all of our driver interviews are presented by the Nashville Sheriff and Social Furniture in West Nashville. Social Furniture, where we sell comfort. Shop local, shop social at 5412 Charlotte Avenue. We're live at Titans Training Camp. Things will be wrapping up here again relatively soon. We're going to talk to Caleb Farley, but coming up next, we will get back into the Deshaun Watson ruling. Some breaking news happened. We couldn't get into that earlier. We will do that next. You'll hear from Kevin Stefanski as well. Chase Willie and D-Mace live at Titans Training Camp, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Make sure you watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. You can see all of our smiling faces live here at Titans Training Camp. And, of course, our training camp coverage is presented by USA Hemp Store and Parman Energy, your one-stop petroleum solution. Back here at training camp, Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you.
We got all kinds of stuff going on.
Yes, we do.
We got the Yakov Trenin arbitration hearing going on. It looks like Juan Soto has been traded to the Padres. We're waiting to see if Eric Hosmer is going to agree to go back the other way before it's official.
Yeah, he's got to waive a no-trade clause.
Robert Hassel from Nashville is involved in the deal going from the Padres to the Nats. You had the Dolphins getting penalized, lost the first-round pick, stemming from the Brian Flores lawsuit saying that they were tanking games, which has been found to be true. We got all kinds of stuff happening here.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. Love deadline
day.
Love deadline day for sure. Caleb Farley is scheduled to join us.
I can't repeat the Crash Davis line from Bull Durham when he goes out to the mound. You know, nobody knows what to get Billy for the wedding anniversary. He goes, we're dealing with a lot of bleep.
Yep, that's basically how it is right now. But it looks like Titans practice has wrapped up. The fans are on the ready for the autograph line. So Caleb Farley going to join us here in just a second. But we will talk a little bit of Deshaun Watson. Kevin Stefanski, the Browns head coach, was asked about it, and he addressed the media on losing his quarterback for potentially six games.
Has Deshaun expressed remorse?
Again, I didn't read the – I was out on the practice field, so I haven't read the entire report, but I believe Deshaun has told you guys in a press conference, he's told me privately, he wants to be the best version of himself. I believe that wholeheartedly. He's working on that. And I'll let Deshaun at some point speak for himself. I've tried to just be where my feet are and operate with the information that we have available to us. So, you know, this process is not my process. So it's agreed upon by the PA and the NFL. And all I can do is respect it. Our job as players and coaches to focus on what we can control and do the things that are within our power and ultimately to do our job. And I think the guys are doing a nice job of that. We understand the questions. We understand the questions that you guys have, but it can't stop us from doing our job right now. I'm confident that Deshaun will make good decisions on and off the field. Obviously, the on-field decisions, he works very hard at that with the playbook and meetings and being on the practice field. And then off the field, Deshaun's no different than the other 90 guys right now and the 53 guys eventually, that we expect them to be great citizens in the community. We have a plan, certainly for practice. As we get closer to the preseason games, we'll make some decisions as it relates to that. But my understanding is that he can play in the preseason games.
There you go, Kevin Stefanski, Browns head coach. I'll tell you this, you know, say what you want about him as a head coach, if you think he's a good head coach or not, but I do kind of feel for him because this is something he's inherited. You know, people above him have made this move that gave Deshaun Watson all this money, and he's trying to coach a team and prepare a team for a season, a team that does have a lot of talent, and he's having to go through all this mess too.
D-Mace, I don't know how you feel about it. I thought he navigated that circus fairly well. I mean, you think about all the pitfalls you could have there. He basically said, look, I'm not going to comment. Because the remorse part of this is a big part in a lot of people's minds. Forget about the ruling or anything, but it was in the ruling where the judge specifically said he did not show remorse. The Haslams, the ownership group of the Browns, released a statement saying he's very remorseful, which was the polar opposite of what came down in the ruling. So that's where that question came from. And so he was ready for that question, and he gave the best answer he could without answering the question. He said, look, I'm going to Deshaun's going to have to fight for himself mm-hmm. on that. He goes, it's not my process. I'm just going to go with what the league rules on this. I'm the head coach, and I got to do the best I can.
And I think he would have said the same thing had, you know, the arbitrator, the judge would have said, hey, listen, he's gone for a season. I think the head coach would have still came out and said the same exact thing because it's not his fight. It's not his battle to fight. It's Deshaun's. He just got drawn into it because people above him wanted Deshaun on the team. And I'm sure the head coach, you know, appreciates Deshaun's ability to play the football game, to play football.
Sure.
And to be one of, you know, a top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. So who wouldn't want that type of person on your team, meaning the skill set that he has? Now, the other stuff that came with it, he has no control over, meaning the head coach. You know, he's coaching 50-something other players that he has to pay attention to. So, you know, for anyone to get down on the head coach, this is not his deal.
Yeah.
Right.
This is not – he's just the guy that has to – he's just the face of it and has to talk about it.
And at the same time, he's got to be able to handle the questions because he knows we're just getting started in this. But I'll tell you what, it is going to be interesting whenever Deshaun Watson does speak publicly the next time, because I know this. It has always struck me that he has really not ever come forward with any admission of guilt here, and I do wonder if that will happen at some point, realizing that what he did was really, really wrong, because it's not in dispute.
He's not, will he?
No, I mean, at this point, he doesn't have to.
Yes, he's not. He's
I know.
And I
just,
look,
but
I'm
the,
with
in
you.
The, in how we view him, like there are a lot of people that they don't even want to talk about the Browns and him at quarterback now. It just stings right now. It's just kind of that disappointment of it's six games. It's all. It's like he got away with it in a lot of people's
but
minds.
But again, I go back to what I said yesterday. It's sort of the hypocrisy and inconsistencies
You're right.
of the NFL. You can go back to player owner. Same thing with Robert Kraft. This is basically.
But you want the next one to get be
but
different.
I understand.
You want
that.
It to be different.
I understand. We all want things to be different. But when we, when people are such in outrage and this hate and everything else over this particular situation, and I understand it, they didn't have the same when Robert Kraft was in the same position.
Yeah.
They didn't. It was, oh, he's just an old guy. You know, he's just a dirty old guy. No. He did something wrong.
Right.
Legally, it was wrong. And from a football standpoint, it was wrong.
Morally.
It was wrong. Exactly. So everybody looked at Kraft as, oh, don't worry about it. He's on it. They'll slap him on the wrist. He'll be fine. But then when you get to Deshaun Watson, it's get him out. The NFL will suffer because of what he did, and the NFL didn't impose a year ban. And now women are going to lead a sport. Did women lead sport? After what Robert Kraft did,
there's no difference.
It's worse what Robert Kraft did because those women are more likely trafficking into the U.S. and they are living under conditions that they have no say over.
They're both wrong.
I'm saying they're both wrong.
They're both wrong. But I think with Deshaun, you know, now you got these 30 women that have come forward, and there's this pattern.
But don't believe. That wasn't the first time Robert Kraft did that. That was the first time he got caught. But that wasn't the first time he did something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's probably reasonable to think that.
So I'm just saying, listen, I've said this yesterday. I'm not condoning. It was morally it was wrong. The kid has a problem that he needs to address. But no one had this energy in saying, oh, women are going to leave the NFL when Robert Kraft did this. You know why? Because people didn't care about those women that were in that building. You know why? Because a lot of them probably was illegal. So you didn't care about them.
Okay. Well, let's try this.
I'm just speaking facts here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's pause for a second. Let's welcome in Titans cornerback Caleb Farley, who has come over to our broadcast location as they have wrapped things up here at Titans practice. Caleb, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Doing fantastic. So, obviously, your rookie year was tough for you, battling injury. Now you've been out here. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Just being back out here is truly a blessing. It's a humbling experience all the last year, and I'm just grateful to be able to run around and continue to do what I love.
Do you feel like that the red shirt year, however you want to put it, kind of helped you because you were able to get some classroom time, be around these guys, be around your coaches, and just study, and now you're able to apply that with what this defense wants to do?
Well, I wish I would have got reps and got game experience, but yes, I feel like I matured a lot in the past year, being able to just see kind of routines of a lot of my teammates and what it takes to be consistent, you know, not flashing good plays, but just being consistent and being a good player.
You got a young cornerback group, but, you know, Christian is one of the veterans that's been around a while. So what are you learning from guys like him as you're out on the field together?
I mean, I learn with each rep, with each experience rep, but most importantly, I just learn what it takes, how to work hard every day. And when you think you're working hard, how to get to, you know, more. And that's really where I'm at right now. I'm just trying to work as hard as I can.
You got some pretty talented receivers out here that you're going up against. This guy right here played 15 years in the league. You think you could have handled him back in the day?
That's a blessing. I would have competed.
Not making any promises.
It would have been a battle. It would have been a serious
my
battle.
My hat goes off to all guys that, you know, has made a great career at this game. And, you know, I truly respect everyone who's done that because I see and know and feel. And I just see how hard it is, you know. So that's a tremendous accomplishment right there in itself.
We're talking with Caleb Farley, Titans' former first-round draft pick. Now, you had to be, more than anyone else, you had to be chomping at the bit to get out here. Not just first day of regular, two-a-days, well, two-a-days no longer, but regular camp, but just to get out here in pads to really go out because you hadn't been in pads in a long time physically doing what the team has been doing for the last year.
Yeah, I've been very eager to get in pads and to get back running and to just get myself back in shape. You might think you're in shape, but then when you get to playing, you realize that you're not in shape. So it's just getting out here and running around and trying to go as hard as I can every day to just continue to get, you know, faster and more in shape.
Now, what were your conversations like with Coach Vrabel through last year when you knew, hey, listen, it's basically like Willie said, it's a redshirt year. I got to get healthy, but I still want to be a part of the team. I know how it is when you get injured and have to sit out for a while. You sort of feel disconnected a little bit, but what was your conversations with Vrabel and the defensive back coach when you were not out there participating?
I think all the coaches did a great job keeping me engaged and keeping me enthusiastic about football. And Coach Vrabel doesn't sugarcoat anything. You know, he lets me know the routes that I need to take and the work that's ahead. So, you know, I'm thankful to be around these guys and this organization.
We're talking to Caleb Farley, Tennessee Titans defensive back. And, Caleb, we're just looking back over your resume. It's interesting. We were talking to Hassan Haskins yesterday. He went to Michigan, and for a while it looked like he was going to play linebacker. And the circumstances started to change, and all of a sudden he's a running back, and here he is in the pros. You were a high school quarterback, and at one point you were going to be a wide receiver at Virginia Tech before you moved over to the defensive side of the ball. Do you think all those experiences help you see the game in a different way, maybe than somebody who played one position their entire life?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, I've been playing tackle football every August since I was like 6 years old. So just being around the game for a long time and, you know, catching and running footballs, doing different things, developing different skills, I think it has helped me.
So when you were asked to go from wide receiver over to the defensive side of the ball, how was that process? Was that an easy one for you? Did you get it? Or, you know, we all love to have the ball, right? I don't know if you were ever asked to play defensive back, but what was that like when the coaches said this might be the best thing for you?
They originally was asking me to play wide receiver because we had three senior corners in the DB room that ended up having great careers, and we didn't have a lot of receivers. So I was very comfortable with that because just playing quarterback in high school, you know, I was extremely comfortable with the ball in my hands, just being able to make open field plays and things like that. But after I tore my knee the first time and they asked me to go to defense, I wasn't really fond of it at first because I felt like, you know, I was already comfortable at offense. I felt like I didn't have that much of a learning curve to overcome at offense. But I just wanted to do whatever I could to help the team and make it to the next level.
Yeah, and get on the field, right? The faster you can get on the field and help, the better it is.
Absolutely.
So what's the most fun part? I've been to Virginia Tech's campus a couple of times. Beautiful mountains all around you. What was the best part of maybe attending Virginia Tech? They got a pretty special atmosphere on game day.
Just the culture, the football culture up there. Coach Beamer, Bud Foster, Lane Stadium. It's just the culture, the atmosphere. It's electric.
Everybody in that town is all Hokies all the time, aren't they?
Yeah, it's pretty electric.
Inner Sandman hits and it just goes nuts.
Now, how was it being a part of that special teams? Because he's known for having, if not the best special teams in the country, one of the best.
Yeah, I was my freshman year. I did some kick return, other than that, I didn't really get to. I wasn't really on a lot of special teams during my 2 years at Virginia Tech. And then when Coach Fuente came in, he honored Coach Beamer with special teams by wearing the 25 Beamer jersey. Anybody who was making plays, so I think they did a good job of continuing the legacy of Beamer ball and things like that.
How Caleb Farley is with us. How excited are you? You mentioned wanting the game reps. You're going to get 3 preseason games. I don't know how long you're going to play in those, but to get some game reps coming up and then also practicing against Tampa and Arizona, how beneficial do you think that's going to be for you?
It lets you know where you're at. It's iron sharpens iron. You got to be able to be fundamentally sound to make plays, and you have to play well and fast. Or it'll let you know where you're at. So I'm excited to continue to sharpen my skills and just try to get as good as I can get, to help this team win.
We're about a week into things, and, I mentioned the talented receivers you go up against. Has the chirping started, the competing, trying to push each other? Is that all ramped up now that the pads are on?
Absolutely. I feel like everybody comes out here and competes every day. But also I think Coach does a good job of, keeping people in the right mindset, and we take care of each other also.
Is there one guy, it could be on your team or throughout the NFL, that you sort of look at and you watch what they do and you sort of take bits and pieces from them?
It's definitely been Kevin Byard. That's somebody that I've looked up to. Even his routines, I've added even vitamins he take. I try to take the same things. And even today, I gave up a play today. Error, and that's the first guy that's on me, giving it to me real and hard. So that's somebody I respect a ton and I look up to, because he's done it. He's come in and he's done it. He's proved himself. He's worked every year and played at a high level. So that's somebody that I try to follow and reach the level they're at.
That's one thing that we heard from Bud Dupree when we got a chance to talk to him yesterday, is that camaraderie of a good defense. You can be honest with each other, be supportive, but also motivate each other, point out when somebody makes a mistake. But he looks at that as a positive when you can communicate on that level. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Guys bust their butt to get off the field. And when it's big situations like third down or certain things that we expect, and then especially my position, if I get beat, it could be a touchdown. If I make an error, it could be a first move the chains, first down, third. So those are times that I gotta lock in and make the plays when I need to make the plays.
You're a young player. McCreary is a rookie. Christian Fulton is a young player. There's got to be a pretty good chemistry between all of you guys as you learn how to succeed in this league together and hope to get better together.
Absolutely. I feel like everybody in the DB room has a great bond. We have a great understanding about each other, and we really pick each other up and push each other. And we're a tight-knit group. Pretty close.
He is Caleb Farley, Titans cornerback, joining us here. Caleb, I appreciate this so much for you stopping by. Best of luck in camp and the rest of the way this season.
All right, appreciate you guys.
Thanks. Yep. Caleb Farley, last year's first round pick for the Tennessee Titans, joining us here. Look for big things out of him. Coming up next, Shane Bowen, Titans defensive coordinator, going to address the media. We will bring you some of that. It's Chase Willing, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Back here, Chase, Willie, and D-Mace live at Titans training camp. Let's head to the podium and hear from Titans defensive coordinator Shane Bowen.
Different types of receivers, so it's been good to have him back out here and actually going through practice.
How do you like what Roger McCreary has been able to put forth?
Yeah, man, I've been pleased with him. We've had this conversation in the spring about him. He's not a rookie. Like, I don't feel him as a rookie. He's poised. He doesn't panic in coverage. He stays square. He challenges. He's got a good understanding of I think what it takes to be able to play man-to-man, and we saw that stuff from his college tape. And he's been able to come in here and translate, and he's been outside, he's been inside, he's handled it. So I've been really pleased with where he's at. He's just got to continue to progress.
Inside-outside versatility, is that something you guys kind of projected when you...
Yeah, I think always, anytime you can get those guys with versatility, it's huge. Because, again, you only take so many guys to the game. So, I mean, I've been pleased with him being able to go in there and what he's done in there so far, especially with Elijah being out right now.
How much is that, Shane, on a guy on a corner, rookie quarterback coming in to work both?
Like, yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot. Like, I do. I think the skill sets are totally different in man coverage. Right, what you're seeing route-wise is totally different in man coverage, and then with us schematically, I mean, there's a lot of communication that's involved with that nickel and those linebackers when we get in penny defense. So, and I think he's handled it. So, it is, in my mind, they're two totally different positions. They really are. Like, there's some things that carry over between them, but we asked a lot of our nickels, and he's been able to go in there and handle it.
Depth look behind David Long and Zach Cunningham at inside linebacker, especially with Monty Rice out?
Yeah, I've been pleased with that group. It'll be good whenever Monty can get back out here, but I think Dylan Cole, he's played some games. He's been a good player on special teams. I think he's smart. He kind of understands what we're trying to do. I think Joe Jones, same type of role, a vet who has a good understanding. Chance has done a great job in camp so far. I've been really pleased with Chance. He's another guy that has came in, and he's trying to work the techniques we're teaching. The biggest thing was him, with him, for all of us, was once we get the pads on, how's it going to be, right, with all these guys? But I've been really pleased with Chance. I think Gibby does a great job out there taking command of the defense. So, again, I think we got some good pieces there.
You seeing Zach and David sort of fit together and communicate the way you kind of envisioned?
Yeah. I think it's a process. I think they're both kind of working through it right now to figure out what each of their role is in doing that. But I've seen it. I saw from David in the spring. It's continued here early in training camp, taking more of a leadership role. I think Zach, again, is the first time really getting through training camp, getting through everything with us. Because he wasn't here. He came in late last year, wasn't here early in the spring. So he's getting more comfortable. You see it. So I've been pleased with where they're at right now.
I assume you've seen that block kick Zach had at Vanderbilt where he jumped the line.
Yeah.
When you're analyzing a guy play like that, what does that tell you?
Yeah, I think instinctive. I think his length shows. It shows out here all the time. He's a really long player who can cover some ground. But he's always been instinctive. That's you don't have over 100 tackles in the NFL if you're not an instinctive player.
Shane, having the front four back, and what does that do when you're able to go through a whole camp with those guys and trying to build on the success you had getting to the quarterback last year?
Yeah, I think just their chemistry. Like, it's a big part of what we do. We ask those guys to do different things. They know they got to be able to win their one-on-ones, but it's not always straight one-on-ones. We can do some different things with those guys where they can kind of play off each other. And I think their understanding what we're trying to accomplish, what each of their role is in a certain scheme might be. The biggest thing, I think they communicate very well. I think they all kind of see things the same way, which has been great. So hopefully that can keep moving forward.
Were you not happy with today's practice from a defensive standpoint?
We got to be better. Yep, not good enough. We got to be better.
The next step for Christian Fulton maybe to get his hands on more footballs, more interceptions, because it seemed to really develop as a cover corner last year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a time and place when you're in position. Again, if you're in man coverage, it's hard to get interceptions. We're preaching, keep your eyes on your man, make sure your man doesn't catch the ball. But when we're in zone, having some of the instincts, some of the awareness of what's coming, having a feel, making sure we're playing with vision on the quarterback, those are when you really get your opportunities to catch them.
Thank you. Titans defensive coordinator Shane Bowen with us in his
along
press
with the
conference, along with the air horn and everything else. We will react to that because I thought, you know, Jared asked a question. Jared always seems to get the quick answers, but he asked the question, and Shane Bowen was very quick with his response. We'll discuss that coming up next as you listen to Chase Willie and D-Mace live from Titans training camp, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Back at Titans training camp, Chase, Willie, and D-Mace. You just heard from Titans defensive coordinator Shane Bowen. All of our training camp coverage is presented by USA Hemp Store and Parman Energy, your one-stop petroleum solution. Chase McKay, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. Jared just stopped by. He has his plus and minuses ready to go for this afternoon, starting at 2 o'clock. But he asked the question to Shane Bowen, and Shane was very quick to say, we got to be better. It seemed like the defensive coordinator was not happy with his defense today at practice. And, you know, we've had multiple conversations about this, that you're not, your season is not going to hinge on your training camp practices and if you're, you know, winning practices and things like that. But, you know, if you're the DC, you do want to try and minimize the mistakes. And it felt like from that comment he saw too many today.
Well, you just want to have consistency in what you do. Consistency in a good way, not a bad way. And when you don't see that consistency, or when you see, you know, and Caleb talked about it, hey, listen, I blew a coverage and end up being, I think that was a deep pass to Racy that he caught. It was a blown coverage. Defensive back didn't take the man all the way down the field. When you have mistakes like that, those are mental things that just really gets on a coach's nerve. It's not, you know, the two things that gets on a coach's nerves, effort and the mental mistakes that you have. Because we went over all of this in meetings and walkthrough, and then to have a blown coverage, come on, you can't have that, and you can't have it consistently. And that's what it was today. There was no consistent play in the defense. Now, if you got one side of the ball dominating every practice, we got a problem.
Right.
We do. But yesterday, the defense was playing well. Today, the offense played well. It's sort of that ebb and flow.
And you want that competition at practice, right?
Exactly.
You want the two sides getting after each other and maybe even, you know, stating it to the media. They don't have to do that. So I'm never going to get too high or too low on who wins a particular practice or who's unhappy with how a practice goes. I don't put a lot of stock in that. I'll tell you what came through to me on Shane Bowen there. Just think about how far he's come in his demeanor. He sounds like a confident defensive coordinator now. He has got so much more credibility, not only with the media, where there was all these questions about him the last couple of years. Why don't they just give him the title? Why, you know what? He really proved a lot to a lot of people last year. And I think when he takes the podium now, he's speaking with a lot more maturity. He's a pretty young coach.
Sure.
You know, but he's got that presence now to where before it was like, hey, who's Shane Bowen? You won't hear from him very often. And, you know, I just think he's come a long way.
Well, and I think, you know, a lot of people are going to credit Jim Schwartz. And I think Jim Schwartz deserves – some of that, you know, for coming in and being an advisor and being with the team and working with him. But I honestly think the biggest thing for Shane Bowen and his maturity is either Vrabel realized it himself or somebody said to Vrabel, like, hey, you got to get out of his way and let him do it and let him grow. And that includes giving him the title and all of those things. But, you know, if you're gonna put somebody in a position to do a job, don't micromanage them. Let them do the job. Now, if they make mistakes, point those mistakes out, how they can get better. You know, that's part of teaching. That's part of coaching, just like you would with a player. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that, you know, especially early on in Vrabel's tenure, and I think a lot of, you know, young head coaches do this. You know, you want to have your hands on everything.
Yep.
And then eventually you learn that, okay, I got to back off. Shane's got it. I can, you know, he and I can talk about stuff, but I don't need to monitor him like maybe I would, you know, maybe last year like he did with Todd Downey a little bit more because he was new as the offensive coordinator.
Well, he didn't have to micromanage him any longer because you brought Jim Schwartz on. And Jim Schwartz is sort of like the advisor. So now Vrabel can step back and his focus can be somewhere else. Well, the offense with Downey and him being, you know, a first time, I believe, offensive coordinator. Well, last year, you know, you don't give Shane Bowen the title. And this is what I like about Vrabel. You got to earn it, just like with the players. You got to earn it. There's no separation here. Everybody in this building, you must earn your keep. you must earn your title, you know. So Shane Bourne showed that he can be a defensive coordinator. He got the title. Downing has shown that he can be an offensive coordinator. He gets the title. But he hires Kelly to help him. So now Vrabel doesn't have to micromanage that situation. Now he gets to kind of float around like a head coach is supposed to do.
Yes.
You know?
And I'll give you one that I'm reminded of. Remember the what we talked about the other day, that Shane Bowen, his scheme is a little bit different than Vrabel's scheme. He went with the two, we talked about the two high safeties, a little bit less man-to-man than they were playing, the adjustment. So that took some trust from Vrabel's end to allow Shane Bowen to run the scheme that he wanted to run. And with Schwartz in there, I don't think that's insignificant, because remember when Schwartz took over as the defensive coordinator, he did not play the Buddy Ryan kind of Jeff Fisher defense that Jeff Fisher had played for a long, long time, with the aggressive pressure and, you know, press coverage and all of that stuff that was great, you know, huge effectiveness for the Titans. But Jim Schwartz was much more of the Tampa 2, get the rush with the front four, using Albert Haynesworth as the star. So he had a little experience with kind of, hey, let me put my own stamp on this. Let me go with my own beliefs. I think that probably helped that process along.
Well, you have to. You want to stay within the framework of what we're doing in the building. You know, Schwartz didn't, when he was defensive coordinator, he didn't deviate a lot from what Jeff had, you know, envisioned this defense being, an aggressive downhill defense. He still had that, but he played it a little bit different.
Yeah.
Well, Shane Bowen is the same way. You know, I'm going to work within the framework of what this defense is. The building blocks are there. What we want as a defense, I'm still going to implement that, but we're going to do it in a different way. Not to say that we're totally going to go away from what we used to do, but I'm doing it just in a different way. We still same mentality, same philosophy, but just doing it a little bit different. Offensively, it's the same way. We're not going to deviate too far from what we were doing 2 years ago, but we are going to do some new things. It is the building blocks and the philosophy is still there, but we're going to do it from a different angle.
Yeah, and I think that you're seeing that. I mean, I agree that we started this conversation with just being impressed with how Shane Bowen conducts himself now. And I think I'm not concerned about the defense. I mean, I think the defense as a whole is going to be fine. They may have had a bad day in his mind, but overall, you know, we talked about this last week. I think the defense is going to carry this team early on while the offense gets in sync, even though, you know, some of the things you've seen, especially out of the young players on offense early on in camp, have to make you feel pretty good about things moving forward, that they might be a little more in sync. Granted, it's practice against your own team. You're not in game-like situations. We'll see when they practice with Tampa and Arizona and they play the first preseason game, which will be next week, against, I think it's Baltimore. That's when you'll really get, you know, be able to see, you know, some of these things and what they look like. But, you know, overall, I think Mike Vrabel should feel pleased with what he's seeing out of both of his offense and defensive unit.
Well, yeah.
Outside of the normal things you got to clean up.
Listen, as long as you see progression in the football team, not necessarily one side or the other, even though you want to have that, but as a football team, as a head coach, if I put on a film, I should see this team getting better, not regressing. And I think each and every day, if you've been out here, and I understand some days the defense will win, some days the offense will win, but as long as I see that progression as a team, then we're headed in the right direction.
I loved that we got a chance to talk to Caleb Farley today and get sort of where his head's at. I think it was the first real conversation I've had with him. He's an interesting guy. You could tell he's been thinking a lot, putting a lot of thought into it. McCreary is really getting the headlines right now. A lot of questions coming about McCreary and his early success. So it's a good little competition going on. Of course, Elijah Molden, another member of that young corner group, is not available right now. So that's a big part of the story here, is how that young group comes along together.
Coming up next, we'll talk to ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. He will join the show. Plus, coming up at the bottom of the next hour, Ask D-Mace makes its return as well. It's Chase Willie and D-Mace live from Titans training camp, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.